Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey, everybody. I'm here with my good friend and colleague, R. John Robbins, the owner, founder, and major operator of How to Manage. And how to manage a small business. So it's how to manage a law firm.
A law firm and how to manage a small business.
Yes, absolutely. And you're in how many countries now? Two, three?
We've got 50 full-time employees. Most of them are based in the United States. We have an office in Canada that I've never been to, but they tell me it's nice.
They tell you what's nice.
You get that. Get that because you're cool. It's amazing how many people don't get that reference, right?
Right.
And we've got members. We've got about 400 law firms that we manage all over the country, and some in Canada, a couple in Europe, but mostly around the United States and Canada.
Gotcha. So we were talking over the weekend. We were going to have this conversation. These are some interesting times we're living in, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was really funny because we were having that conversation and I was cooking breakfast and you were doing something, I think, in your kitchen. And we were just talking. And I think halfway through, we're like, damn, we should have recorded this.
Right.
Let's try to recreate the magic. So, these are very interesting times. These are very exciting times. Very, very exciting times. We don't see times like this come along very often in a business career. And I think that there's going to be some generational wealth created in the next 12 to 18 months based on the decisions that people make today. And there's going to be generational wealth lost in the decisions people are going to be making today. I don't think people fully appreciate just how fast things are changing right now.
Yes, like lightning speed. And you wouldn't see this in any other kind of circumstance that would cause this. So you said something that's interesting. The generational wealth created. Talk to me about the generational wealth that's going to be lost. Because I have a lot of people that come and I talk to them and I'm like, you have absolutely no idea what this is going to do for industries, careers, the unprepared, the people that can't think through this. Talk to me about that, Arjun.
Okay. Before we get into that, let me just say for everyone listening to this that we're going to make a very big distinction between the medical part of this, which I am completely unqualified to talk about, versus the economic business part, because I think a lot of people are still very uncomfortable about, it's so interesting. People are comfortable talking about all the economic problems and challenges that come along with a medical or any kind of a problem where people are physically suffering, but they're uncomfortable talking about the other side, which is all of the opportunities that are created when something tragic happens. So I just think it's important that we distinguish between the medical and the economic. So you want me to talk about some of the ways that people are going to be like generational loss.
Yeah. So let's set the foundation for everybody here, right? Because I think you just said something that's very important. There is a major problem, the pandemic that happened, and the way that we're viewing it and what it's causing us to have to do as a human species in order to move through this problem, in order to solve the problem. And I mean, like you could get into right, wrong, prepared, not prepared, how they're handling it, whatever. Like it'll be debated forever. Like they still debate the depression, right? So people will be debating this forever. There's no question about that. And while people are debating it, there's others that are moving. They see opportunity. There's also people that are in fear that don't know what to do. There's industries literally being created because of the problem. And many of those industries, well, like basically all those industries, unless it's a criminal industry, is there to help people based on the changes that are actually happening. And I think a lot of people don't understand that that's where so much of the opportunity lies.
And to lose and to gain.
And to lose and to gain. Yeah, absolutely. So talk about why so many people will lose during this time. Like what is the fundamental shift that's happening that causes people to lose in a time like this?
Trying to hold on to the past is a big problem. So look, there's the short-term loss and then there's the short-term loss and then there's going to be long-term generational loss. The short-term loss is I failed to pivot. I didn't zig. I didn't zag. The short-term loss is the obvious stuff, right? So this is an opportunity right now to the fourth power. The first dimension of this opportunity is understanding how the economy works and positioning yourself in the path of the economy so the economy can lift you, as opposed to positioning yourself in a way where the economy will either leave you behind or run you right over. And most people really don't understand how the economy actually works. And most people who at least think they understand how the economy works, they're certainly not behaving in a way which would indicate that they understand how the economy works, right?
Can you give us the Cliff Notes version of that? Because like, I know you and I could sit and talk about this for hours, but what's the Cliff Notes version for how the economy works for people to try to get just some kind of an understanding of what you might be talking about?
Right. So the stock market, for example, is a reflection of the economy. It is not the economy, all right? The economy is driven by goods and services, not assets. There's a big difference between goods and services and assets. Assets hold value. Land is an asset, right?
Yep.
Goods and services, the only way to unlock the value, the only way to get value out of goods and services is to consume them. Most goods and services are perishable, right? Food, all kinds of agricultural goods. Services are obviously perishable. The hour that doesn't get used to produce value for someone is lost forever. It's not like you can store that hour up in a bottle and do something with it in the future, right?
Right.
The entire economy, if you think about it, is really driven by the production, delivery, and consumption and sale of goods and services, not really assets, okay? So right now, people have changed their behavior in response to the medical needs, the pandemic. We're staying indoors, we're staying away from other people, we're not going to restaurants, we're not traveling, we're not doing all those things, right? But if you understand how the economy works, then you understand that the economy is driven by the consumption of goods and services, and the consumption of goods and services is driven by human behavior. And for better or for worse, and I would argue not for the better, human behavior largely has not changed very much in like thousands of years, right? A thousand years ago, Marcus Aurelius wrote a book, and in the book, he wrote an introduction to the book. In the introduction, he thanked his parents for being good parents, and he thanked his mentors like you for being good mentors, and he thanked his friends for, you know, giving him sympathy when he had hard times, and he thanked his wife for being a good wife. I mean, that introduction could have been written today. People haven't changed that much, right? A thousand years ago, people were trying to figure out how to eat, how to have sex with each other, how to kill each other, how to avoid being killed by each other, how to do business with each other, how to buy things, how to sell things, where to live, what to do, and who they want to be. And people have been behaving the same way, driven by similar relationships for a thousand years, yeah. Right?
Yep.
So right now, so that's what drives the economy, okay? People are pursuing a better life with every decision they make. And to do that, they consume goods and services. Most of us are in the goods and services business. even people who are buying and selling real estate, they're providing services for the purchase and sale of real estate. Real estate being a prime example of an asset as opposed to goods and services. Okay, so we're in this pandemic. People aren't eating out at restaurants. People aren't filing for divorce. People aren't buying tickets to go to the movies. People aren't going to plays. People aren't, all the services and goods that people are used to doing, they're not doing because we're locked down. But you got to remember that when this pandemic ends, people are going to return to their old behavior. And it's not like everyone who was going to get a divorce isn't going to get a divorce. They're still going to get a divorce. It's not like anyone who was, you know, they were going to start a business before the pandemic started, they're still going to start a business. Everyone who was going to take a vacation before, they're still going to take a vacation. I'm trying to think of all the different businesses that I know your audience is in to give examples, but I think you get the point. Yes?
Yeah. They're
the first, everything. So the first power of this opportunity is understanding and positioning yourself so that when people return to their normal behavior, you're in the path of their consumption, as opposed to the way I see so many people doing it today, which is they basically are treating it like everyone's on vacation. Like, oh, there's a pandemic. We got to stop our marketing. There's a pandemic. We got to just stay at home. No, now is the time to be going out and cultivating the relationship with the referral sources. Now is the time to be finding any opportunity to be of any service you can to anyone you ever dreamed of doing business with, because you use the opportunity to do work to earn the right to call the person a client, to call the person a customer, to call the person a patient, whatever you call them in your business. Use the work to earn the right. So that's the first stage. That's the first level of growth. People will return to normal behavior. And right now, unfortunately, what most business owners are doing is they're demonstrating by their actions to their customers, to their former customers, to their referral sources, that they really are very transactional in nature. In other words, you can't do anything for me today, so therefore, I'm not going to bother with you. And when the pandemic is over and you can do something for me again, as in buy something from me again, then I'll be back in touch with you. So a lot of wealth is going to be lost in the short term because of that. Conversely, a lot of wealth is going to be created because of that. The second opportunity is understanding that when people come back to their old behavior, they're going to come back in a surge. And a lot of businesses were barely getting by before, right? I mean, they had infrastructure. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people who claim to be in business, they're not really running a business. They're running a hobby. They don't have a written business plan. They don't have a written marketing plan backed up with key performance indicators and metrics and a marketing budget. They don't actually know how to sell whatever they do. They're just kind of getting by and winging it. They don't have documented processes and systems and procedures for how the work is supposed to get done in a systematic, organized way by any kind of a team to scale. They don't have financial controls. You get what I'm saying here?
Yep, 100%.
And so when this surge comes back, right, and people are like extra hungry for goods and services, a lot of these businesses are going to get crushed and generational wealth will be lost. And generational wealth will be gained by people like me, like you, like your clients, like my members. And we're like, everyone that I know is scrambling right now to get our businesses ready. So when that surge happens, we're ready to ride it. That's the second opportunity. The third opportunity is understanding that it is precisely because of this pandemic that new demand will be created. So I spoke to a guy today. He invented a new industry. He literally invented a new industry in the last month. You ready for this?
Yep.
He's a virtual magician entertainer. He now has,
it's cool.
He now has companies hiring him to provide, to perform virtual magic shows, and he's figured out how to make it work with Zoom, and you know, you got to see it. It's amazing. And it really feels like you're there, right? If someone had said to us, hey, we're gonna have a virtual magic show a year ago, we would all say, you're out of your mind.
Right.
But we're now learning how to relate virtually. And that's gonna open up and create entire new opportunities where people will be open and receptive to things, and they'll demand things that they would have never even accepted before. We've got law firms that are having virtual hearings and virtual mediations and virtual magicians. And my son is 4 years old. He's taking virtual karate lessons. And today he had his belt test, a virtual belt test, you know?
That's amazing.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So the third opportunity is to understand that, you know, there's so many people right now who are, they're focusing. This is something I learned from you. What we focus on grows.
Right.
Right.
100%.
And they're focusing on the problems, and they're focusing on the inconveniences, and they're focusing on how everything is not going to be the way it used to be, instead of focusing on the opportunity, like Napoleon Hill taught us, that in every, you know, opportunity shows up disguised as a problem. And since we're all in the business of solving problems, and there's nothing but problems out there, and we're all in the business of solving problems by making other people's lives better.
Yep.
I mean, what a wonderful time to be in business, in our kind of businesses, right? Where we're in businesses of helping people solve problems and make their lives better.
Yep.
There's nothing but and then, of course, the fourth opportunity. So the first one is understanding that we will return back to normal. The second power is understanding that when we return back to normal, there will be more demand for new services that didn't even exist before. The third is understanding that it's going to come back as a surge, and you better be ready for it, or you're going to get crushed by it. And then the fourth opportunity is by virtue of the fact that so many people are going to get crushed by this, and they will. So think about this. Let's say you own a restaurant on a street with like five other restaurants. Okay.
Yep.
And normally every restaurant on the block does, I'm just making it up, $100,000 a year. Okay. $100,000. Every restaurant there does $100,000 a year. And one of the restaurants on the block, one out of five, doesn't come back because they're so badly run to begin with. They were basically a hobby. They weren't a legitimate business. And the pandemic literally, it was like, that's all it took to put them out of business. They were that close to going out of business anyway. Now there's four restaurants sharing the same $500,000. Everyone's now got to get ready to do $125,000. Well, on the one hand, everyone's celebrating. My revenue just went up by $25,000. But you know, that second restaurant, it can't handle the extra $25,000. Right? They don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the training, they don't have the working capital, they don't have the know-how, they don't have the documented processes and procedures and systems. And so they're going to go down too. Now there's three restaurants sharing the same $500,000. Now everyone's doing, I can't do the math, what is that? 500,000 divided by three is now 150, 170 something thousand dollars, right? Which now is going to bring down the third restaurant, which maybe it could have handled $125,000, but it sure shit can't go up by 50% like that.
No.
And then here's the best part. Here's where I'm just like a kid in a candy store. You know me, right? I mean, I am like excited beyond all get out. The very best employees of the first, second, and third restaurant, they're now on the market.
They are.
Right?
100%.
I mean, it's a hiring bonanza. So, that's just short term. That's not long term. You asked me long term.
Yeah, that's like the wave that comes out in the surge, and then, but that wave raises the level after it goes past.
Right.
But it also does the destruction.
Here's the long term. The long term wealth destroyer is the fact that we're adults. We have been around, right? We've lived through SARS, we've lived through swine flu, we've lived through 9/11, we've lived through, you know, we've lived through stuff,
right?
We understand that this isn't the end of the world. We have perspective. We have a certain scale of thinking that allows us to keep things in perspective, right?
An adaptability experience.
Well, here's the thing, because you asked me to speak about the generational risks, the generational wealth destruction. There is today a generation of teenagers and preteen kids who have never been through anything like this before. They have no real perspective or idea or understanding what this is all about and that there will be a life afterwards. And they're sitting at home with their parents, and their parents are losing their own minds and focusing on all the problems and slashing all their expenses and firing all their employees and, you know, talking about how bad everything is. And the one thing, you know, most of this is not unprecedented. Most of what's going on right now from an economic standpoint is very much precedented, right? The one thing that's very much unprecedented is that we today have millions of parents who have very undisciplined, unhealthy relationships with money, undisciplined mindset, very a lot of thoughts and ideas that were not, that they never thought through critically to begin with. No criteria for anything, right? Have no idea what real wealth is, have no idea what real business is. Like you said, it's such a shame that most people don't even know someone who has a net worth of over $1 million. And why would they, since less than 4% of the US population has that, right?
Right.
Well, now we've got the kids crammed in there with the parents under stressful situations, just getting force-fed these really unhealthy mindset beliefs about business and money and the economy and self-sufficiency and resourcefulness and you name it, right?
Right.
And what do you think is going to happen fast forward 10 years, 20 years when those kids enter the workforce, when those kids become entrepreneurs or business owners? I mean, they are being taught not to think clearly.
Right.
And that's going to be the real generational, the J curve. It's like, this is the J curve. Do all your viewers know what the J curve means?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
This is the J curve, except it's not the J curve. It's the straight down I curve.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, it's also an amplifier, right? So this will amplify the good and it'll amplify the bad. So even if you have parents, like, they're making it okay, wouldn't say that they're like really negative, but there's negative tendencies there. This will exacerbate entitlement. This will exacerbate blame. This will exacerbate victimization.
Will?
Yeah, well, it is. And you're right, because then the kids are getting hit like with a barrage of ideology, and they're associating it to very, very important things that they, if they're not careful, they will come to the same conclusion that their parents did, which is it's just not good. It's not good at all.
I mean, both of us have stories that we know about our upbringing and our influences and our parents, but at least in normal life, it's like you have this much exposure to your parents, and then you've got this much exposure to maybe a teacher who helped you think more clearly. And then you've got this much exposure and you go over to the friend's house of a friend's house and their parents think differently. And then you go hang out with your friends over here whose parents think differently. And you're getting all these different influences that are kind of keeping you sort of in balance, right?
Right.
Now, these kids are sitting at home with their parents 24 hours a day in close quarters, watching their parents go through all of their dysfunction, their dysfunctional relationships with money, their dysfunctional relationships with employment, either as an employer or as an employee, their dysfunctional relationship with I mean, you name it, right?
Each other.
With each other. Yeah. And the kids have no, I mean, it's just taking all of that and like, in concentrate. It's like a concentrated version of that. And I think we're going to see a generation of kids who are going to be taking these lessons with them into their future career, business, job, relationships, you name it.
Yeah.
Very disturbing.
It is. And let's also be fair. This will also create some real geniuses. And so there'll be some kids out there that internalize this in a way to come out and win big. They'll be huge. They'll be the huge innovators of the future too. So I think it creates both.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing. It's going to be so, well, you know, the kids who are sitting at home with my members, with your clients, and they're watching their kid, they're watching their parents innovate, and they're watching their parents pivot, and they're watching their parents work very consciously, very deliberately, very intentionally on their own mindset. You know, this is what we as parents are always dreaming of, is I wish I could show my kids what it really takes to build and sustain a successful business. Well, those kids are being exposed to something completely different than the other kids. It's just an amazing time. Everything's going to come out of this thing, I believe, magnified.
How long do you think it's going to take us to come out of this? Just your opinion based on what you've been seeing the last couple of weeks.
So let me give a little bit about my background. So
do it.
Because you know this. This is why you're asking me, but I don't know if most people know this. So my undergraduate degree was communications, law, economics, and government. So I basically was like an econ major who also studied government and communications. So I studied economics, I studied public policy, I studied banking. That's my background. And then I now run a business that we have 50 full-time employees all over the country, and we have monthly revenues of over $1 million a month. So I have relationships with bankers. I have three bankers who I have their personal cell phone numbers. We talk. I have a financial advisor who's a guy with a Harvard MBA, who's my financial advisor. I've got a tax strategist who is a tax lawyer and CPA accountant. I mean, I'm surrounded by some really smart people. So what I share with you is not just me. It's a lot of very, very smart people who are helping me think this through and anticipate. So a lot of it is going to depend on when the actual medical part of this ends. As of today, and I think we should date stamp this, because obviously, you know, someone watches this a year from now, it's going to be completely out of context, right?
Right.
So can we date stamp it when?
Yeah, we absolutely can. Go ahead.
April 22nd, 2020. So where do we stand today? The payroll protection program was originally supposed to take 2.5 months to distribute $350 billion. Everyone knew that they would have to do a second round, because everyone knew that $350 billion wasn't nearly enough, but they expected it to take 2.5 months to consume. Instead, it all got consumed in 14 days, right? Yep. And you told me your story about your experience, right?
Yep. Ours went in. So ours application was all ready to go by our banker, and it was submitted hours after it was allowed to have it submitted. And we were approved, but there was no money left. So we didn't get anything. Not yet, right. Anyway.
Well, you'll get in the second round.
Yeah.
I advised our members to wait a week or two to let the first group go through. And I figured they'd consume $50, maybe $100 billion of it, and let the banks figure it all out, because the banks were completely unprepared for anything, because the act was handed down by Congress with zero instructions, zero guidance. I was on the phone with bankers on Sundays, and they're like, we are still trying to figure this thing out. Literally days, hours, even after they opened it up. So you asked me how long I think it's going to take the economy to recover, right?
Yep.
I think that it's going to take, I see the middle of 2021, we'll start to see things really kind of return back to what we consider normal. The stock market has not hit bottom yet, in my opinion. I think we're not even close to the bottom of the stock market. You know, it was up, then it came down, then it had a little rally. I think it's going to crash. You know, every time you see the stock market do this, it always does the same thing. It's up, it comes down, it has a little rally, it comes back down again. As soon as it goes back down the floor, passes the floor of the first crash, of the first hit,
yeah,
it's going to go down even further.
Yeah.
I can explain the very practical, predictable, understandable reasons why I believe that's the case, if you want me to. Or not.
Yeah, why don't you? Go ahead, do it.
All right, so look, you're the CEO of a publicly traded company. Before this pandemic happened, you were expecting earnings to be $10 a share, yep. Right? And every shareholder was kicking your ass and criticizing you that, what an asshole, why is it only $10? Why isn't it $11?
Right, on a quarterly basis.
On a quarterly basis, right? And now this pandemic has happened, right? And you're thinking to yourself, okay, I think that shares are going to be down to $5 a share. Let's just say $5 earnings per share, right? You've been getting your ass kicked all day long, all year long. You get your ass kicked for turning in 10, because why is it wasn't 11? And you were busting your ass to get it to 10, that it wasn't 9. And now you think it's going to be 5. What are you going to tell your shareholders to expect? You think you're going to tell them 5?
No.
Have you not learned your lesson? Of course you've learned your lesson. These are smart people, right? So they're going to say, I think it's going to be down at 3.
Yep.
Right? I think it's going to be down at 3 because maybe if everything goes right, I can get it to 4. And maybe I'll get it to 5 and I'll be a hero. So they're going to short their own stocks in their projections. And that's going to cause a crash. Okay. That's one, stock market. I think people are completely underestimating and have not really anticipated the rippling effect on the ecosystem. So let's talk about the restaurant that doesn't get their payroll protection program funding, can't pay their employees, can't pay their rent. Okay, well now they can't pay their rent, which means now their landlord doesn't get paid, which means now their landlord. So let's just go, like, we'll go and insert in rank.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, do it.
So first is they're not going to pay their rent. They're not going to pay their landlord, all right? Second, they're not going to pay their insurance. They're not going to pay their utilities. They're not going to pay the company that delivers food to their restaurant. They're not going to deliver the company that delivers flowers to the restaurant. They're not going to pay the company that does the laundry for the restaurant, all the linens and tableware, stuff like that, right? So there's a whole ecosystem around that restaurant that's going to go down because that restaurant went down. You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
Now the landlord, who was counting on the rent to pay his mortgage, can't pay his mortgage. And now his whole ecosystem starts to have problems. The purveyor of food no longer needs to buy food from the farmer, no longer needs to buy food from the fisherman. The fisherman who no longer needs to sell food to the purveyor, who's not selling food to the restaurant, that fisherman no longer needs to buy a new boat. He no longer needs to buy more fuel. He no longer needs to pay the mechanics to maintain. And this, I think it's going to take 18 months for this to all work its way out. Because I think people just have this very unrealistic understanding of how the economy works and how interconnected everything is.
Everything is. Like, and I keep trying to explain to people, like, look, this will collapse from the bottom up.
Exactly. Because
the longer we stay in it, the more people at the bottom don't make money and they can't pay for what you have. And then those people can't make money and pay for what you have. So it eventually, I don't care how high up the food chain you are, the longer it goes, the more of a chance it's going to hit you.
Absolutely. You know, I see people criticizing Ruth Chris Steakhouse for getting $20 million of payroll protection program. It's like, people have this very fairy tale, fantasy land, entrepreneurially very immature idea of how multi-million dollar businesses work, right?
I know.
And they think that the multi-million dollar business is the multi-million dollar business because it's the multi-million dollar business.
Right.
Right?
Right.
No, no, no. It's the multi-million dollar business because they sell a lot of steak. That's why it's a multi-million dollar business. And if you stop selling steak, it stops being a multi-million dollar business. It's not like it's just handed down from heaven that this is a successful business, right?
Right.
Like my business, we got 400 law firms. Well, first thing I did 6 weeks ago is I called a meeting of my team and I said, our number one goal is to help the clients of our law firms, not our law firms, help the clients of our law firms. Because if we help the clients of our law firms, then our law firms are solid. And if our law firms are solid, then we're solid. And so we've been doing all kinds of programs to try to help the clients of the law firms be solid so that the law firms are solid. And I think people are really, they don't really understand what makes their own business work. A lot of people.
I would agree.
And so they're going to get, I think they're going to get run over by this thing.
Well, you know, like we both had this very similar view when it happened of where is the key spot to serve, because this is an opportunity to serve, and where you give that service determines on how it actually flows up from where you're actually giving that service. But so many people, just what they did was they just froze and grabbed on. And, you know, now, so I check this out. I don't know if you've been having this experience, but I have. Over the last few days, I've been getting people contacting me, talking about, number one, there are people that they know that they've had it. They're done. They're not going to like pay attention to the orders anymore. And they're going to go about their life. Like, they're not going to stay at home. They're not going to shelter in place. Like, I don't know what the fuck they think that they're going to do.
Yeah, that was my question. Is there a restaurant open that I'm not aware of? I mean,
yeah, right. Exactly. Like, I don't know. It is just fear and anxiety gone nuts. And it's, you know, like, if you see all the marching that's in the streets, the capitals that are being marched on, the picketing and all of this stuff, if it goes on too long, like you end up with major chaos on the streets.
You notice that how many of those people are armed?
No, I haven't noticed that.
But watch the news. Those people are carrying guns.
Really?
Oh yeah. A lot of weapon carrying people. It's pretty scary. Pissed off, scared. Weapon-carrying people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, so let's pivot this a little bit. What? So we talked about why it will go wrong, why it collapsed, what bad. What should people be looking for from an opportunistic place to serve themselves and others at this point?
Well, you know, too many people try to go out and get a customer, a client, whatever you want to call them, so they can try to squeeze work out of the person.
Yeah, right? Make a sale.
Sorry?
Make a sale. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, they try to get a client. They try to make a sale, get a client, so they can squeeze work out of the person.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've always believed, and when I met you and I discovered that you believed it too, I think that's part of why we really resonated, or part of the reason we resonate, is we see it as, find an opportunity to get to do any kind of work you can for someone. Find an opportunity to be of service in even a very small way and use that to cultivate a relationship that you can turn into something really spectacular for the long term, right? We've got members who have been with us for 10 years. We got members of How to Manage a Small Law Firm who have been with us for 10 years. I mean, I've been working with you since 2010. Yeah. That's 10 years, right?
Yeah, 10 years. Exactly.
And that all came from a little thing you did for me that grew into another opportunity, that grew into another opportunity, that grew into another opportunity. And we've done millions of dollars of business together.
Yeah.
I mean, I've paid you close to $1 million in our relationship.
I know. Yeah.
I have.
Sure.
And I've referred millions of dollars to you, and gladly so and deservedly so. But imagine what would have happened if that first thing was, if you can't get a big payday out of me, fuck it. I don't care about you, Arjun.
Right. Exactly.
Look at all the opportunities we would have both missed, and all the people that we've worked with would have all missed. So I think that, you know, right now is a huge opportunity. So I'll give you an example. I'll give you a practical example. And I'm going to use law firms as an example, just because that's the world that I work in a lot. Okay.
Yep.
So right now there are, let's just take immigration, just as an example. I had a conversation with an immigration lawyer about this very thing recently. Most immigration lawyers are basically saying, well, the courts and the this and the that and the other, and they're running and they're hiding and they're doing nothing, right? Most real estate eviction lawyers, for example, are the same thing, because the courts are flat out saying you cannot evict a person during this time, period, end of story, right? Great. Well, while all the other lawyers are doing nothing and basically hiding behind the court rules, we've got members who are going to the landlords, who are going to the immigrants, who are going to the, you know, the people in the different practice areas and saying, look, we've created a special pandemic program. And for a very, very small amount of money, $100, you can engage our services for a limited engagement. It's not going to be the entire case. It's not going to handle your entire matter, but it's a limited engagement where, let's say, using the immigration lawyer as an example, at least we can officially open a file for you.
Right.
At least we can officially say you are represented. At least we can give you a laminated card to keep in your purse or wallet that says, I am represented, so that if you get hassled, INS knows who to call, because the last thing you want to do is be locked up right now, right?
Right, right. Sure.
And so while all the other lawyers are like, well, I'm not going to do anything because I can't get this person to give me $5,000, we got members who are going out and signing up hundreds of clients at $100, $100, $100, $500, or $500, whatever the number is, right? Using this as an opportunity to be of service, because when the pandemic ends, bam, now they've got, you know, more work. I was going to say more work than they know what to do with, but if there are members, we're building the infrastructure too.
Yeah.
But restaurants can be doing the same thing. Everyone can be doing the same thing. I mean, my son's martial arts studio, he's 4 years old. They're doing virtual karate lessons. We are running a virtual kids club. I don't know if I told you about that. Did I?
You told me something similar to that. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, at our live quarterly meetings, we run a kids entrepreneur club
for
our members who go to there, and our team that runs the kids entrepreneur club at our live quarterly meeting, they've been running a virtual kids club every day for the last 6 weeks. Start off, we had 20 kids just of our members. And then our members said, hey, can I let my staff's kids be here also, because they need to be productive. Second week, we were up like 75 kids. And then they said, can we share this with some of the lawyers that refer business to us, because they can't refer business to us because their kids are driving them crazy and they can't run their business. We got like hundreds of kids in this virtual kids club that we run every day at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
That's great.
And like, who knows, maybe this becomes a whole new business for us. I don't know, but be of service. And the kids club is free. Did that address your question? An example of
100%, 100%, because the, you know, what you said, something I think is very important. that a person is looking, like they're very focused on. So let me just tell you the way that I explained this when I started, because I started this call series about how to manage uncertainty during a crisis, right? And what is the mindset around this? Like, how should we actually look at this? And one of the things that I pointed out was that the world as we know it, all the channels of distribution have changed, but it's temporary. They've temporarily changed. What are you doing?
I was moving the computer.
It's okay. They've temporarily changed. And we're kind of hardwired for how money comes into us, how we distribute products and services out of us. We cannot expect that to continue when an outside entity has put restrictions on how most of us can actually do business. Because really the only businesses that are kind of still stably in place is only what's extremely necessary right now. Anything that had any involvement with personal contact, if it could not continue to be done online, then that structure had to change. So like restaurant, right? So if a restaurant can't move into the delivery business, which is obviously not going to be the same as, say, 200 people a night or whatever their volume is, that's going to change. However, if they would understand that and recognize the idea that, okay, so if that gets put on hold, if I also conduct myself in a different way right now, that I can move through this and I can build assets for when it opens, which is exactly what you were saying. How can we find ways to serve and not think about here's the biggest sale you could make or selling at the same volume or whatever, because everybody's in the same boat. So instead of like cutting your nose off to spite your face because people say, I can't pay or I'm afraid to pay, but they still need the service, start building the relationship with those individuals. Because your business is building. You're going to have a large percentage of those people that are ready to start up and do business with you when this is over. But if you don't do that, Here's what's going to happen. You may not be thinking about doing it. You might not be ready. Your five friends that you're talking to this about are probably all in the same place because you're all talking about the same thing. And you have a competitor that's thinking, huh, this is an opportunity for me to come in and scoop up all the business that is around me because everybody else is afraid to do something or they're going to turn away a client base because they don't think that they could serve them or they don't think that they get paid. And in the meantime, they just go straight to the floor. And either through innovation or through the ability to help, the competitors are going to come in and you'll, when this starts up, you'll find out your business is already gone.
Well, because most people don't really understand what business they're actually in to begin with.
Correct.
The restaurant thinks they're in the business of selling food. They're not in the business of selling food. They're in the business of managing relationships with people who buy food from them. Right?
Absolutely.
And they, and why isn't the restaurant, I mean, if I was running a restaurant, I would be having virtual happy hours with all of my customers. I'd be bringing all of my customers to a Zoom call every day, every afternoon, and literally teaching cooking classes. And let's all cook this special together. And let's talk about this wine together. And let's talk about this together. And I'd be building and building and building and building and building the list, right? Because now I can invite you, there's this restaurant. I mean, you and I, when you come to Miami, there's this restaurant, you and I, we always go to that restaurant. You want to talk about it? Or this Joe's? Is a restaurant we always go
Joe's?
To.
Joe's? Joe's Graham House?
Yeah. We love Joe's, right? Well, imagine if one of these restaurants in Miami or one of these restaurants in your city was doing these virtual cooking community type classes, right? I could literally invite you to dinner. We could have dinner together, even though you're there and I'm here. And I could then introduce you to a restaurant that I might not otherwise ever be able to introduce you to.
Right.
Right? And okay, you're thousands of miles away from me. Well, what about my friend who's just, 20 miles away from me?
Exactly.
Who I could invite her or I could invite him, to this restaurant that I like. To do this virtual thing together because it's free and let's all do it. And then after the pandemic is over, they've now discovered a restaurant they would have never otherwise discovered. they now understand a cuisine they might have never otherwise explored. Yep. And that restaurant comes out of this thing with more customers than they went into it with.
Exactly. Exactly. Like they could prepare a virtual menu, send you the ingredient list, you order the food, and everybody gets together at Friday at 5 and 6 o'clock and they have drinks and everybody prepares dinner together. Like,
I'd be all over that as a customer.
Seriously. Right? Yeah. And I think people would too. People are looking for something to break up the monotony of the way that they're currently living.
Every Friday we run a virtual happy hour for all of our members. And every Friday I have like a surprise guest on the virtual happy hour. So 2 weeks ago, I brought my chiropractor. I mean, to call him a chiropractor is really, he's a genius. He does something that's spectacular. He does these muscle adjustments and like, he doesn't even have to crack you. It's amazing.
Okay.
And I'm just such a huge fan of what he does. And I had him on as a guest and he taught us all how to do these stretches. And literally I'm on the Zoom, I'm watching 100 lawyers literally standing up in their office doing stretches, you know, in their home office or whatever. I mean, they were interacting and now they're like, oh my God, can you get him to come to our next live quarterly meeting a day early? And we're all going to fly in and we want to book appointments with him. And next time we come to Miami, we want to book appointments with him. And there's so many things that business owners can do, but they don't understand the business they're in. They think they have very self-limiting beliefs about what business they're in and what they have to do, what they can't do. And I kind of ran out of steam on that one, but I think you get my point, right?
I totally get your point. I totally get your point. So we got to stop here at the top of the hour. So we got like 6 minutes. We got 6 minutes to go. What advice do you have for people? So let's say they're listening to this. It doesn't matter if they've made mistakes. Doesn't matter if they haven't done anything. What's your advice for somebody listening to this fresh? They get this, whether it goes out Saturday or something. So they get it in a couple of days and they listen to it and they're like, okay, how should I start thinking? What are you going to tell them?
I would say that the thing to do is to mentally divide your mind in two. You got the part of your mind that's focusing on your old business. And then you got the other part of your mind that's focusing on starting a brand new business. Like you literally starting a brand new business. Think about what a relief it would be if you weren't held back by any of the ways that it used to be, right? My business will do, you know, $18 million this year. And there's days that I wish I could just burn the whole thing down and start over because there's decisions that I made 8 years ago, 6 years ago, that I just can't get rid of these things, right? It's too much trouble to get rid of them. So I just keep dragging them with me year after year after year after year. This is an opportunity literally to give yourself a completely fresh start in your business. Start with a blank sheet of paper and start a new business today. If you have a dental practice, start a new dental practice today. Stop trying to figure out what to do with your old business. Stop trying to figure out how to keep your old business running. Stop thinking about how to save your old business. Just put that aside and start a brand new business from scratch. And you'll be liberated from all of that old stuff and you'll see nothing but there's so many opportunities in front of us.
What about asking for help?
Oh, well, I mean, I figured that anyone watching this podcast is entrepreneurially mature enough to ask for help. I mean, anyone that suffers in silence is just an idiot.
Yeah, well, you know, that there's some weird behavior going on out there right now.
Strength is not – strong people ask for help. Weak people allow their ego to prevent them from asking for help. None of us got to where we are without asking for help. I mean, this week, I mean, I think a lot of people would love to have an eight-figure business, right? Absolutely. I got a $18 million business this year, 15 last year, Inc. 5000, 6 years in a row, fastest growing companies. You got 50 employees. And tell them what I did this week. I texted you and I said, David, I need your help. I need to talk something through with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, the, You did. And I appreciate that. And you've done amazing. Like you've done amazing. And here, but I want to point out something that you do all the time. So for 10 years, we've known each other. And every time we get together, we talk about creative things. That's always a big part of the conversation. When you get a hold of an idea, you seek out the experts to educate you on the stuff that you don't know. I mean, you don't even hesitate. And you have an amazing track record of finding really great people in those areas. And I don't remember this when I met you, but I don't think that that was an issue. Like, because you came to me and asked me for help in the very beginning. Today, though, I see a lot of people doing something even more than typical. I mean, yeah, I know even people that are in a positive, you know, they're really trying with a positive mindset. There's in such fear, because I think so many things have changed so fast, that they're going into blame mode, even with the people that are trying to help them, which is something that you experienced, right? So it's like people are projecting their fear, their anxiety, you know, the dark shit that they've got going on underneath the surface at anywhere but themselves.
Well, listen, I can tell you exactly how to fix that if anyone wants to fix it.
Do it.
It starts with getting clear about your criteria. A lot of people are running around with no real clear criteria, and they don't really actually engage in thinking. They are repeating what they hear from other people without critical judgment, without independent analysis, without really seeking to understand it. And then they repeat it to other people, and then they get stuck with it, right? So, you know, I've been talking a lot about what it means to be a trusted advisor lately. My understanding of a trusted advisor is a trusted advisor is a person who we tell you what we know, we tell you what we don't know, we tell you how we are thinking about what we are thinking about, we're transparent about it, and then based on what we know, based on what we think we know, based on what we know we don't know, this is how we're thinking about what we're thinking about, your situation, and based on that, this is our best recommendation. This is our best advice. Right. And this is the part that a lot of people have a hard time with, which is giving the other person enough respect to let them make their own judgment and make their own choice about what to do. And what we're seeing a lot of right now are people who the nature of their relationship with their clients, the nature of their relationship with their customers, their passengers, their coaching clients, whatever you want to call it, is hierarchical, right? I'm smart, you're stupid, so I'm going to tell you what to do.
Right.
And I'm going to take control away from you, and I'm going to take it personally when you don't do what I tell you to do, and I'm going to then be crushed and emotionally destroyed if my best advice to you doesn't work out, because they treat it like a giant personal gratification ego trip. They're trying to get their love, get their security, get their self-esteem from their clients. Like, I'm Superman. I'm going to come in and save you and rescue you. Well, what happens if you just can't? What happens if what you know turns out to be wrong? Right. What happens if what you don't know turns up and bites you in the ass? What happens if there's a flaw in your analysis? And to take all that responsibility. You know, the problem is people go around acting in life like they're fighting over 100% responsibility. It's 50% your fault, it's 50% my fault. It's 80% your fault, it's 10% my fault, right? That's all bullshit, because the math is flawed. There's never 100% responsibility in anything. There's always 200% responsibility. You are 100% responsible for what you bring to our relationship, how you behave in our relationship, and the choices you make based on our interactions. Right. And I am 100% responsible for what I bring into the relationship.
Right.
But people don't act that way. Right. And people, you know, and every ounce of
they're abdicating a percentage of theirs based on their, well, a lot of it is there's an unconscious rule in the relationship that they're not even aware of for most people.
Well, I'm going even further than that. I'm saying the problem was there months and years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the entire nature of the relationship that they have is to siphon away responsibility from the other person, right? I'm going to take responsibility from you. And you know what? There's a lot of people who will thank you for taking responsibility away from them.
Yeah.
But I will never take responsibility away from anyone, because I understand that with every ounce of responsibility that I take from you, I'm also taking away control. Because if I take away responsibility, I take away control. And to try to take responsibility away from you just so you'll thank me for it is basically turning you into a victim. And I won't do that. And a lot of people, their whole relationship with their customer base is victim rescuer, right? You're a victim, I'm a rescuer, and I'm going to come rescue you, and you're going to thank me for rescuing you, and I'm going to get my ego gratification from rescuing you, right? And now, where there are people who are like really in trouble, those rescuers are just overwhelmed, right? And they don't know what to tell people, and it's scary because they're afraid to make mistakes.
That's not leadership. That is not leadership.
Leaders make mistakes. I mean, all we do all day long is make mistakes.
100%. And we want to make mistakes.
I hope the day never comes that I stop making mistakes, because mistakes are how you grow. Mistakes is how you do things. I mean, the person who's not making mistakes, I know there's lots of funny quotes about it and people go rah, 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 and they got these posters on their walls and stuff. But the truth of the matter is, you mistake your way into accomplishing anything. And if you're afraid to make a mistake, then that means you're afraid to actually do anything, because you can't think your way, you can't learn your way, you can't practice your way into wealth. You have to act your way into wealth. And anytime you're taking action, you are by definition going to be making mistakes. Because if there was no chance of making a mistake, then there would also be no chance of making a profit. Profit lives with mistakes.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Were we supposed to like tell people about some kind of an offer, or we just said we're here to talk, and I'm happy to do it.
I don't have an offer. I don't have an offer. No. We're just talking.
I love it.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you. And I think that is the message that primarily needs to be driven home. You know, one of the things that's also very obvious around this is nobody knows what the fuck to do. 100%. It's so volatile. There's so many different components to this. It's affecting so many different things. And the truth is that there's a lot of consequences at stake here for a lot of people, even if they're not warranted. You know, there's going to be a lot of people that are blamed for all this when the dust settles. And I've never felt to begin with that it's the government's responsibility to keep us safe, so to speak, from everything in the world, but to be able to adapt to whatever shows up and do the best that they can within what is their limitation, you know, from a constitutional perspective. But the reason I'm saying that is because all you have to do is turn on the internet or the news or whatever, and it's an enormous blame game. So people are looking for abdicating their personal responsibility and finding the scapegoat everywhere that they can for what's happening.
And the thing is, the more they succeed in justifying the shifting of responsibility, they're actually disempowering themselves, because they're giving away control, which causes them to be even more anxious, which causes them to be even more uptight, which causes them to feel even more vulnerable, which actually triggers them to need to blame people even more, So it's like a, it's like this vicious cycle that, that gets very, very ugly, very, very fast. And it's just such a pleasure to, okay, so you didn't want me to pitch anything. I'm not pitching anything, but I'm just going to tell people. This is for you, because this is your audience, not my audience. You know, we met each other 10 years ago, 9.5 years ago. It was October of 2010 was the first time we met.
Yeah.
That little thing in Seattle. It was like six of us, right?
Little thing in Seattle. Yeah.
Little thing in Seattle. There were six of us, and everyone had their turn on the hot seat, and I was broke. I mean, I was hardcore, seriously. I mean, I was first world broke, but I was broke, right?
Right.
I wasn't
right.
Third world broke, but I was, right. I was struggling mightily. And you know, had you not, and I had my turn on the hot seat, and after my turn on the hot seat, it was supposed to be 45 minutes. It went an hour and a half. And afterwards you said to me, if you don't turn this into a $10 million business, it's just because you're an asshole. because it was so clear that the plan was viable, right?
Yeah, totally, 100%.
And I said, okay, what do I need to do? And you said, you need to do a VIP day with me. And out of everyone who had a hot seat, I was the only one you said that to. So it wasn't like, you need a hot seat, you need a hot seat, you need, I mean, it was really right. A VIP day. It was really clear that I needed a VIP day. And I said, okay, how much? And you said $15,000. And I said, I have $1,000 left in all of my, in my bank account. That was my only bank. I've got $1,000 left.
It's $25,000 now, just so everybody knows, it's not $15,000.
Well, then everyone should have done it 10 years ago.
Yeah. But yes, and, go ahead.
I am to this day, I am so grateful that you cared enough and believed in yourself enough and saw enough in me that you were willing to give me the opportunity to do that instead of making the choice for me. Like, oh, that guy's broke. He's never going to pay me. I won't even make him the offer. Like so many people would do. Right.
Right.
And I'm also, and this is going to sound a little bit odd, because I'm also going to thank myself, but not the person that I am today. The person that I was 10 years ago. I mean, the courage of that man.
Seriously.
I mean, I gave the man that I was 10 years ago gave me a life today that if I talked about it, everyone listening and watching this would think that I was trying to brag or show off. And it all started because you didn't try to take responsibility for me. And you didn't try to take responsibility from me, and you didn't take control away from me. You took 100% responsibility for your business and your judgment and your decisions, and you let me take 100% responsibility for mine. And I mean, I just am forever grateful.
I'm grateful too. It's been a great relationship, and you had a brilliant idea. You also, like, I could also see, I don't know that, this is something I don't think that I've ever not experienced with you. Like, the desire to win has always been there. Like, you've got an iron, non-waving desire to win, which is admirable. Like, that is a really admirable thing. And frankly, I don't think that you could have done it without that. You know, the pitfalls that come and hit so many people without really working on their own desire, their own self-esteem, their own reasons for going where it is that they want to go. You know, I mean, you don't build an $18 million business unless you make a fuck ton of mistakes along the way and you get your ego out of the way to make them, right? So, I mean, you did that, man.
Yeah, so anyone who's watching this, I mean, don't email me, don't call me, don't find me on Facebook. Don't track me down and ask me for a reference about David. You just heard it.
You just heard it. Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I really appreciate you doing this. Let's do another one. at some point in time. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe people have specific questions and
seriously. Yeah.
We can just do another one about boats.
That would be good. That would be a good one too. All right. Let's wrap this up. Everybody have a great day. Don't just do nothing. Do something. Find somebody to help. See you on the next podcast. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.